It is a real privilege to speak to you today in this, my last speech of the Labour leadership campaign. Today I want to talk about what's happened during the contest and how those of us who want a modern, electable Labour Party should respond in the months and years ahead. Because whoever is elected on Saturday will face huge challenges. To lead our party after a tumultuous and often divisive contest. To take on the Tories, who are our true opponents, and determined to remain in power at the next election and beyond. And above all, to regain the public's trust with a credible and inspiring alternative so we can win in 2020 and form a government once more. Whatever happens on Saturday, we need to seriously reflect on what has happened during the leadership contest. Because even if Jeremy Corbyn doesn't win, his campaign has mobilised and infused vast numbers of people in a way we haven't seen for decades. The debate that's exploded during this contest has in fact been simmering for many years. Because the last time we really debated the purpose of our party and what we stand for throughout the Labour movement was the reform of Clause 4 20 years ago. After we were elected in 1997, we did not put enough effort into continuing serious political debate in our movement. I think this opened up too much of a split between the party in government and the party in the country. We got on with changing Britain for the better, but too often neglected to engage with our members about the policies and approaches we used. When Gordon Brown took over from Tony Blair, we didn't have a proper debate about our party's future, in part because there wasn't a serious contest. We didn't even have it after the financial crash, even though the global economic crisis raised huge challenges for centre-left parties across Europe, thereby opening the door further to those who believe market economics was always bound to fail. And we didn't have a debate in the 2010 leadership contest, which ended up being dominated by the story of the rivalry between the Miliband brothers, and because after Ed won, we wanted to keep the party united. A shared purpose is vital for political parties to succeed. But that only comes after genuine discussion and debate, not by papering over the cracks. And by dealing with the difficult challenges facing your party, not by ignoring them or hoping they'll go away. Over the past 5 to 8 years, we have failed to take on hard arguments about a range of issues, from the public finances to reform in welfare and our public services and Britain's role in the world. Every day we neglected to make the argument for modern social democracy left more space to those promoting the comforting politics of yesteryear. Politics is like a muscle. If you don't use it, it weakens. And when you finally start to try exercising again, it cries out in pain. Same people who believe Labour must face difficult questions head on if we want to get in again are Tory light, or have swallowed the Tory manifesto whole, may seem like a quick win during a leadership campaign. But it simply repeats the tactical, internally focused politics that has damaged our party and been a substitute for strategic thinking for too long. It arguably, if unintentionally, ends up giving further credence to those who are in complete denial about having to deal with these issues at all. And even more importantly, leaves crucial territory to the Tories, allowing Labour to be defined by our opponents rather than defining our politics ourselves. But those of us in the modernising part of the party must also face up to our challenges. Without doubt, hundreds of thousands of members and supporters who joined our party are crying out for change. They want us to be a passionate party of principle which offers a clear alternative to the Tories. The programme Jeremy Corbyn offers is not new. His policies and politics are the same now as they were in the 1980s and will end up delivering the same result. Neither is he the sole keeper of Labour's principles. No has a monopoly on being led by their conscience. But modernisers must be honest with ourselves. Many people who joined our party in recent months do not believe we are offering change, and some of them doubt our principles altogether. This is partly because too often in the past we have come across as technocratic and managerial. We've allowed ourselves to be defined as purely pragmatic, concerned with winning elections alone rather than winning for a purpose, thereby ceding the mantle of principle to the far left. I do not believe that charge is fair, but it is real, and we have to face up to it. We must also face up to our failure to develop a new and convincing agenda that moves us on from the Blair years and looks to the future. During this leadership campaign, I've argued that Labour must be the party of responsibility and reform on the economy. Unless we are credible on the public finances and regain people's trust with their taxes, we won't get a hearing on anything else. But reform is also required because the global economy is leaving too many people behind. The world of work is now very different to the one from which our party was formed. So we must secure the infrastructure, skills and long-term financial incentives necessary to rebalance the economy, create wealth in every part of the country and ensure the benefits of growth are more fairly shared. And provide social protections and give people more of a say and a stake in the workplace when more people than ever now work with small businesses and are self-employed. I've argued that education and opportunity must be our driving passion, because your chances of fulfilling your potential in this country still too often depend on where you're born and what your parents did. That's what I came into politics to change. We need a revolution in early years services so every single child starts school ready to learn, rather than falling up to 90 months behind before they've even begun, as children in many of the poorest areas do. We've got to stop obsessing about school structures and focus on what really matters: amazing heads, brilliant teachers, and an inspiring curriculum that prepares young people for the modern world. And we must make lifelong learning a reality, so everyone has the chance to get new skills and training as we all live and work for longer, and as technology develops at a dazzling speed. I have also said that just as we need to reform the economy, so too we must reform the state to give people more power, control and say over their lives. Labour should be championing devolution, not trailing in George Osborne's wake, with a radical agenda to get power out of Westminster and down to our cities, towns and counties, and to communities and individuals too. Because we get better decisions and results on skills, transport, welfare, housing and health when they're taken by the people they affect. And because Labour should be as passionate in our determination to help those who suffer from the poorly functioning state as we are when public services are removed by Tory cuts. Now, John McCrone's policy review did important work on these issues during the last Parliament, but we failed to learn enough from it. We should also have done more to draw on the experiences of many of our inspiring Labour councils. Labour in local government is rethinking how we meet the needs of our communities and prepare people for the future, even in very difficult times. But nationally, we have not done anywhere near enough serious thinking to define a bold, new and inspiring agenda that shows the relevance of our party and values in the modern world. This leads me to the second part of what I want to say today, which is what happens after the results are announced on Sunday and how we should respond. First, everybody must, and I believe will, accept the result and the mandate of the new leader. They will have won the right to pursue their agenda and must be given the space and scope to do so. If Jeremy Corbyn wins, it would be a huge mistake not to accept that result as legitimate. The voters will have made their decision, and the rest of us must accept it as such. Second, whoever is elected must recognise no leader has a mandate for untrammelled power. Anyone who seeks to exacerbate divisions will only store up trouble for the future. We must turn our focus to the public and turn our fire onto the Tories, who are the real enemy, and not turn in on ourselves. And all of us who want a modern, electable and outward-looking Labour Party must end the old Blairite, Brownite splits, which are long past their sell-by date and should be buried once and for all. I said very early on in the campaign that if Jeremy Corbyn becomes leader, I will not serve in his shadow cabinet. I have too many important differences with him, particularly on foreign policy and the economy. Leaving NATO and Europe would be a disaster for Britain in an increasingly risky and independent world. Spending billions of pounds on renationalising swathes of the economy and reopening coal mines won't create the high-skill, high-wage jobs of the future or convince people that we can be trusted with their money. And his plans for so-called people's quantitative easing risk destabilising our currency and pushing up inflation, harming the living standards of millions of people in this country, particularly the poor and the low paid. When the public is crying out for politicians to say what they mean what they say, I cannot serve on a Labour front bench if Jeremy Corbyn is leader. But I will continue to serve my party and the people of Leicester West and constructively engage with all of the issues, just as I've done throughout this leadership campaign. Third, we must quickly turn our focus to campaigning in next year's crucial elections for the London Mayor, the Scottish Parliament, Welsh Assembly, and in our local councils. Winning for Labour in London and every single MSP, AM, and councillor we gain is a step closer to us returning to government in the UK. Fourth, we must engage with the hundreds of thousands of members and supporters who are now in our party. Despite what some of you might think, the thing I have absolutely loved in this leadership contest is the debate we're having about the future of our party, a party I believe in with every fibre of my being, and a party I think is best placed to help Britain meet the challenges of the world. And this debate won't stop on Saturday, nor should it. We must never be frightened of discussion, and we should always welcome contributions from all parts of the party, which has always been a part of the church. Finally, and most importantly, we must do the serious thinking Labour needs to set out a credible and optimistic vision for the future on the economy, immigration, reforming social security and our public services, and crucially, Britain's role in the world. Sometime in the next 2 years, there will be a referendum on Britain's continued membership of the European Union. I believe this will be the defining political issue of our generation, and that it will be for Labour to lead the pro-European case. The world is more connected than ever before. Our economy is global. And as the refugee crisis shows, many of the challenges we face cannot be dealt with by countries acting in isolation. So our membership of the EU is essential for jobs, trade and inward investment, for social rights as people move, live and work in different countries more than ever before, and for tackling some of the biggest issues we face in the world, like migration and climate change. David Cameron has so far shown himself to be either incapable of or unwilling to provide leadership on this issue. At every stage he's allowed himself to be dragged to the right by his own backbenchers, focusing more on internal political management within the Tory party than on what is in Britain's national interest. But I am also concerned about those on the left, including Jeremy Corbyn, who prevaricate about our membership of the EU at every opportunity. We must not allow David Cameron to reduce the question of our membership of the EU to a debate about whether or not Polish workers get tax credits. And we cannot allow the far left to argue that the EU is somehow against the interests of all his working people, when the reality is that Europe is vital for our economy and for social rights and protections too. Of course, Europe needs to change. The EU's failure to respond quickly swiftly and effectively to the refugee crisis and the ongoing problems within the Eurozone and the Greek economy make that abundantly clear. But the answer is for Britain to help lead the debate within Europe about how we address these challenges together, because they cannot be dealt with by any one country alone, rather than withdraw to the sidelines or out of the EU altogether. But the challenges facing Labour will not. There are only 24 seats with a Tory majority of less than 3,000. And we have got to win back 94 seats to form the next government. Unless we regain people's trust in the economy and offer a positive vision for a better life that the majority of people in this country can feel part of, we will not win in 2020 and earn the chance to put our principles into practice. The only way to secure Labour's next Prime Minister will be to elect someone who stands for leader on the same platform they put to the country. That is what I have sought to do in this campaign. Those who want to lead our party can no longer tap left to get the nomination and tap centre to win the country. In the modern world, saturated with social media and 24-hour news, the public will spot the difference a mile off and punish the party for it in due course. Some commentators say I have been too harsh in the way of I have put my views across in the leadership campaign. Perhaps I was too blunt, especially at the beginning, when so many party members were still reeling from our terrible defeat. But my view is that in politics, as in life, you cannot deal with problems by ignoring or avoiding them. It is never too soon to tell the truth. The real debate we have to have is with the public, not ourselves. And it is only when we apply our values to the world as it is, not as we wish it would be, that we win elections and earn the right to put our principles into practice. They want something new and different. The left suffers more from this anger and frustration than the right, because we are the ones who believe in the power of collective action and the vital role government can play in improving people's lives. Our response mustn't be to turn our backs on the public or turn back to the politics of yesteryear. It must be to rethink the role of government and the state and reform the international institutions on which our country's success and future security depends. This is the challenge facing Labour, and the challenge I will continue to address whatever happens on Saturday. I will always loyally serve our party, because we are the greatest champion of equality and opportunity this country has ever seen, and because our belief that power, wealth and opportunity must be in the hands of the many, not the few, and that through the strength of our common endeavour we achieve more than we do alone, is the only way we will achieve a better future for the majority of people in this amazing country. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your support. Let's move forward and remain proud of this party and all that we've done during this campaign and that we'll do in the future.